Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go. Hello and welcome to Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. Today we are joined by Ashley Anderson. Ashley, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great. I'm great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, I'm really pumped to have you on the show today. And just like pre-show like conversation, we got some great topics to discuss. But before we jump into everything we want to talk about today, I was hoping you could just share a little bit about your background, what you're up to, what you're passionate about, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to date myself, but I have been in technical recruiting since the 90s. My first job out of college was at Microsoft. Definitely the nonconformist of my family. All of them were engineers. And I was like, no, I'm going to get a marketing degree. That makes more sense. But ended up in technology anyway. I've been lucky enough to do this remotely from the East Coast for a long time and have found companies that are open to folks being everywhere. It's been an interesting process. I was kind of the person who knew what to do in 2020. So a lot of go-to to me on that. But I would tell you that I see myself as the lead product manager on the systems and tools that help build diverse and scalable teams at Credit Karma. And for those of you that have never heard of Credit Karma, we're a financial platform that helps democratize information and help everyone find financial progress. So we have about 122 million members right now. So as you can imagine, that's a very big and diverse population of folks that we serve. And I would say that we're all here for the mission of helping our members find, their financial goals.
For sure. And a quick question about Credit Karma. Do you have a globally distributed team or are all the employees in North America? What does that look like?
Yeah. So our main West Coast headquarters is in Oakland, Charlotte headquarters on the East Coast. We have an office in Culver City, and then we have an office in London. And so we serve North America, Canada, the US, and the UK. The team in the UK is fairly small. It's not that big. Charlotte has definitely grown since we announced the headquarters being located here. And we're excited to continue that. So that's our footprint right now.
Okay, good stuff. That's helpful. So everybody can kind of understand your perspective and where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And so one of the first topics we discussed kind of bringing up today is how structured interviews can help get rid of bias in the interview process and in the hiring process. So I wanted to see if we could start there and maybe just we could start kind of with your high level philosophy on the topic and then get down into some actionable tactics that people, when they're listening into this, can actually take away and implement at their company.
Yeah. So obviously we're people, right? We're never going to get rid of bias completely, but we wanted to figure out a way to get as much bias out of the process as possible. And so in talking through that, we wanted to implement a very structured interview process. That's the best way to say it, for all of our teams. And for us, what that meant was defining exactly what that process was going to look like before we ever talked to one candidate, knowing exactly who was going to be part of the decision making, outlining all of the interview topic areas, building banks of high quality vetted questions that mapped to those areas, and then taking a look at how our career framework was built out and building a rubric to map to that framework. And then, our ability to slot people into the levels of job that we were interviewing them for became much easier once we had done that. We were lucky enough to hit the reset button on all of recruiting in 2020. Most of 2020 we spent in a hiring freeze, and we brought back what I like to call the little engine that could. later in the summer. And that team was kind of the kickoff to what this was going to look like. And so we started small and mainly with teams that were only hiring a few of each type of role. But with the learning that we took from those teams, we were able to then get the buy-in from our engineering team, which is where most of our hiring is done. Like 85-90% of our hires are technical. We do not have a sales team. We don't have a large marketing team. You know, we are very heavily staffed with technical folks. And so that has been a really great evolution to watch in terms of adoption. From first, it was product engineering, where we're kind of hiring the same types of engineers every day, all day. And now that structured interviewing has been mapped out to literally every role that we open. And so some are, you know, predetermined because we've been doing it a long time. And then sometimes we'll have a role that's not been opened in the last 3 years. And so we'll start that process from the beginning and make sure that our hiring managers understand exactly what we're expecting from them. I like to say, this is not Burger King. You do not get it your way. We're going to help you. We are your business partner. And so it's been great to watch the adoption just kind of take hold and spread throughout the organization.
Yeah, for sure. So I have a quick question about structured and kind of pre-planned, if you will, interview questions, right? I think one of the challenges that companies kind of run into is that whenever a new role is open, it requires a certain amount of time involvement to craft out those custom questions. And it's like you can jump on a kickoff with the hiring manager and try to get on their schedule and try to ask them what they want to accomplish. And so it's like, it's kind of a, there has to be a member from talent acquisition present, as well as from the hiring team. And then also maybe a junior recruiter isn't the best person for that, right? So you need a senior level team member. So just from like a process and bandwidth perspective, how do you ensure that you can roll that out for every new position without it just becoming like a massive bottleneck to getting started?
Yeah. So I think what's really interesting about the way that we have set up the kickoff process is we work off prioritization. So we might have, you know, 500-600 roles to fill in any given year. We are not going to kick all of those off at once. And so I work with the executive team to really understand what roles are the priority based on the product roadmaps, what interdependencies there could be between teams. And then we allocate like different parts of our capacity to those teams and orgs across Credit Karma. And so we are not the team that has a recruiter work on 40 recs at a time. I want them to do 10 things really well, really quickly, rather than paper push 40 recs through a process and not have any real impact on the business. And so we do a good job with that prioritization process. There's a set of expectations that the hiring managers and the hiring teams understand before they even ever get to talk to someone from my team. We send them documentation and kind of a list of things that we expect for them to build before we even ever meet with them. And they're given anywhere between a week and 3 weeks to get that together. And then once something is prioritized, I can't obviously prioritize something. That's the executive team's job, but I can unprioritize something. So if I'm not getting the attention that we expect on filling a role for a team, I will definitely hit pause and say, okay, look, you're clearly not ready to really work on this. So we're going to come back to you later. And then they'll just get unprioritized. So right. We get the buy-in because they understand time is of the essence. They're going to get a certain amount of our time. And if they're not going to give it to us, then we're going to walk away.
So one thing, now this was at a much smaller company, but one thing I did in the past, I was taking on a chief people officer role with like a 100-person SaaS company, right? And what we did is we actually put into the approval process that they had to fill all this stuff out proactively. So if they didn't have this information ready to go, then the role wouldn't go live.
I love that.
Which I'll be honest, some people were not happy about that, but it really did tighten up the process, and it decreased our time to fill and quality of hire. I mean, it just gave us a lift across the board on a lot of different metrics. So I just think that that's like a challenge, and I'm assuming like the larger the organization, the more difficult it becomes to just keep everything, I guess, like organized, right?
Right. For us too, we've given the business time to figure out exactly what they were, right? So yes. We're not going to let them change the rules of the game during the process. And by that, I mean like the scope of the role, the level of the role, the location of the role. We've given you time to go figure out exactly what you want. Like, go do that, go do your homework so that we can cut that time to fill down. So to your point, like go get your shit together, like go get it done, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I actually, and another thing I want to slow down on that you mentioned was prioritization, which again, is like the larger you get, the more recs you have, the more important that is. So how do you tier prioritization? So like what I did, we worked primarily for our clients within Greenhouse. Mm-hmm. So I'd actually go in there and create custom fields in terms of like tier one, tier two, and tier three. And we kind of segmented it by like tier one would mean full lifecycle support, right? Like we're pushing it to the top. Not only it's going to get our time, but our recruiters are going to work full lifecycle. So they're doing everything from sourcing to screening to, you know, pushing them along through the process to offer and everything else. And then tier two would be just like managing inbound candidate flow, for instance, right? Setting up screening calls directly for hiring managers, the recruiting team not doing that, and then assisting in offers. And we would kind of, you know, switch around tier two a little bit in terms of responsibilities based on the company. Yeah. And then tier three would be like backlog, or, you know, sometimes it would just be like hiring managers need to handle it themselves, right? Yeah. But I'm curious how you went about prioritization and how that changes like the point of impact of the talent acquisition team.
Yeah, so that has definitely changed over the years. So the team that I inherited, there was this self-service model. So if you weren't getting, to your point, full support, then hiring managers could go work on any rec that they wanted to, kind of what we call eat what you kill, right? Whatever you bring in, you can have. And then we would, once someone needed an offer, run with that. Well, it wasn't great for candidate experience, right? People weren't understanding of what exactly was important to candidates, because while I think a lot of people in the business, and I'm not speaking for Credit Karma, I'm just saying in general, think that the recruiting is the part of their job that they don't have time to do. They don't understand that it really is an art and a science. So we were definitely in that model before. After the pandemic, when we came back and like hit the reset button, we got rid of self-service completely. And so we have three tiers. We have not prioritized, and then we have RP1 and then RP0. And so the RP1 is, to a baseball analogy, because we got a lot of sports folks on my team, that's your on-deck status, right? That's when you're going to get this list of homework that you need to pull together, your interview team, the questions, the interview format, all of that. And then you could be sitting on deck anywhere from, you know, 1 week to 3 months. Once something is in R1, it's the homework of the hiring manager. Now, your leader might say you're not ready for RP0 because some other business critical need has come up, whether that's a change in the product roadmap or potentially like a critical backfill, right? Like could supersede anything that had been on deck. And so we work that way. And once you are live, you get full support. And that means sourcing all of it. And we have, as I said, a large technical base. And so a lot of the candidates that we hire are passive. We have to create those pipelines because, you know, there's only a certain number of machine learning engineers, and we want the best of the best, right? So we're having to go out and create that. But once you get that RP0, you are fully supported by my team.
So it's basically like we're not working on it, or we're all in on it. Like correct. There's okay. So that's okay. From a quality perspective, that's definitely the best way to go about it. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. And that's RP0. Like that's, yep. You know, like, okay. All right. So I guess my follow-up question to that is, how is this baked into your ATS where you have fields where you can filter reports based on level of prioritization and what's coming up? Or like how much of this is a manual thing in spreadsheets versus baked into technology so it's reportable?
It's 100% reportable. We are incredibly data-driven. In fact, we have 75 data dashboards that are pulled out of Greenhouse and Workday and talk together. And our head of talent enablement, Brian, he's the one that kind of framed all of that out and started to build it. And we, in the last year, have hired a data analyst specific for recruiting. And so that way we know in our gut that we're right, but now we have the data to prove to the business, like, hey, this is the direction that we need to go, and how fast we need to go or how slow we need to go. So yeah, we're very data driven.
Yeah, that's really cool. So do you have it, do you have Greenhouse hooked up with like Tableau, or like, how are you,
it's just the Google BI tool that we have right now. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Google, and we have the API connector that we're working on. Like, that's been a whole project on the back end for us. Greenhouse has been helping us kind of build that and get it reset up. Yeah.
Right. So that's, but in order for somebody to pull that off though, they do need like the data analyst, right? Like, I feel like that would, without the data analyst, it probably doesn't make sense to connect like a Tableau or like a Google BI or AI, you know, like that. I'm assuming that's like a full-time job. It's kind of like sales ops and revenue.
Yes, I would say it's definitely a full-time job, but it wasn't in the beginning. And we've always run really scrappy and lean. And so Brian was building that and pulling the data daily for a refresh himself. And then it was obviously a proof point to our head of people, like, this is worth the investment in having a data analyst focus on this people analytics space. And so we were able to get that funded. But he, in the beginning, back in 2020 and even 2019, had started to build out those dashboards. So
that's really cool. I mean, that's one of the key indicators to know that a company is taking, really investing properly in talent acquisition. Like, yeah. you want talent acquisition to be at least just as data driven and baked into technology as you would see in a revenue org, right?
Absolutely.
And what's really weird about tech is that at a lot of organizations, you'll see like very robust tech stacks and data driven approaches to sales and marketing. And then you'll see like a very weakly implemented Greenhouse.
Right, right.
And you're just like, you know, because they're just not allocating enough budget. And then it gets into the philosophy. Like, one of the conversations I've been having lately is like, there's like kind of two philosophies on talent acquisition. One is that, you know, it's a cost center. And then the other philosophy is that, no, like, people are the primary driver of value.
Totally.
Right. And this is something that's going to directly impact revenue growth, the future of our, you know, product roadmap, right? Yep. All of these things. And so that's why it's so important to get this right.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have an entire, what we call the talent enablement team, and we modeled that after sales enablement, right? Like, you have, to your point, all of these big companies, small companies that invest in a sales enablement team. Well, why wouldn't we give that to my team, right? That we look at them as the baseline pyramid of everything that drives hiring, right? They are there to make us operationally efficient and better and faster. And so we're very lucky that we have a buy-in from the very top, the executive team. You know, I am one of the only people that goes to their meeting every other week to talk to them about, not, it's not like I'm getting sent to the principal's office. It's it's more of like, hey, what can we do to help you? What do you need? What do we need to tell our teams? And so I would say I've never worked anywhere where talent has such a loud voice at the table. Yeah.
This is, I mean, in terms of the conversations I've had thus far on the podcast, like, this is one of the, this is an example of one of the companies that seems to be doing it the right way. And it is few and far between. Like, a lot of the companies that and leaders I've had the opportunity to speak with, like, they just don't have that robust of a program in place. So I have a lot of questions for you, and I know we're kind of like going deeper into this topic, and we really haven't talked about too much about bias, but I wanted to just ask you just like some questions about the size, you know, how many openings you have, kind of like the size of the talent acquisition team, and just go through a couple like funnel metrics in terms of like percentages and stuff. So I guess my first question is, at any given time, how many openings is your team managing? Like, including the, you know, the backlog, like the whole thing, the backlog.
Like, everything that's not even open, like things. Yeah, you know, that growth number is always a moving target, right? It depends on what attrition is, and our attrition is super low. It's the lowest it's been. It's under 10%, which is incredible. I think
yeah, that's cool.
The tech average is like 18%. So at any given time, the moving target could be anywhere between 400, 500, 600, you know, like okay. It really depends on the day. And right now we're at the start of our fiscal year. So our fiscal year runs August 1st to July 31st. And so part of this prioritization process that we have is we are working with our HR business partners as they do talent planning and org design to understand 2 quarters in advance, is my team right size based on that ask? And that isn't a number, right? That is a complexity score in my mind, because not all roles are created equal. And if you're going to come to me and say, I need like 100 staff data engineers, that's very different than hiring, you know, 100 marketing folks, right? It's just dependent on the complexity of the role. And so we do that kind of 2 quarters in advance. We're working with them to figure that out. And the evolution of our team, like the path we're going towards, we've started to build out what we call the research function. And the best way that you can think about this is a Venn diagram of an HR business partner, a sourcing recruiter, and a data analyst, because what we want to be able to do is work with the leaders and work with the HR business partners to say, okay, these are your org design choices. This is the list of headcount. You know the number of heads that you get in terms of growth this year. But if these are the choices you're making, this is the trade-off. Like, this is where this talent is. This is how hard it is to hire. This is how long it takes to hire them. So helping them actually understand the choices that they're making in terms of that org planning. And that's not fully baked. It's really like an idea that was born in the last year that we're starting to build out. But that, I think, will be our secret sauce.
Are you all using LinkedIn Talent Insights as one of the tools to share with the hiring teams and executives? Or where are you getting your, is it just from, hey, we've been hiring for these roles for the past 5 years, so it's from your own dashboards? Or where are you pulling this information from?
Yeah. So the folks on the research team, like, these are not just like senior recruiters. These are folks that are very, very senior, right? Like, they're as old as I am. And like, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but you know, they've been doing this a long time. So there's a lot of institutional knowledge. But yeah, we also have the LinkedIn Talent Insights tool. My caveat with that product is I would never want a recruiter to go like build a report and download it and go send it to a hiring manager, right? Like, they don't have any of the context and the understanding of what they're reading. And so I appreciate the data that's in there, but I think that the recruiter has to be the one to read and understand that and then give the context of that data, right? Because without it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. They don't understand it.
Well, yeah, for sure. Like, you don't want them to see like, okay, why are we having trouble filling this role? There's you know, X amount of hundreds of thousands of engineers in this market. Like, you know, so yeah, you definitely want the context piece. That makes sense. But so anyways, like, you in the whole, you know, in the wish list, so to speak, right, with the backlog, possibly around 500-ish openings that varies, you know, on a week by week basis. Yeah. And then in RP1, kind of in the waiting docket, like, next up, what, I know it's probably going to be a range, but like, what's that average look like? Like, how many roles on average?
I would have to pull it. I think it changes weekly, right? Like, there's some weeks when there have been roles in there, as I said, right? If a leader says your role can just sit there for a little bit longer, I actually don't think it's the priority right now. It could be sitting there for 2-3 months. I've never seen anything longer than that. But there's probably 30 on deck at any given time. And we're working on 100 plus at any given time.
Oh, so, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's like, okay, so like, the top of the funnel is big and then the on deck is small, and then you're working on 100 plus. And then how many recruiters do you have working on those 100 recs or 100 plus recs?
So it's interesting, like, in terms of the size of our team, I think we're approaching 50 plus. We have contract coordinators. Okay. But I don't count all of them as hiring resources, right? Because you have the ops folks, you have my data analysts, you have the managers who are really there to build and grow and develop their teams. We have some managers that do like player coach, where they're responsible for some hiring, but mainly like growing and developing less senior recruiters. But When you look at the types of roles that we're hiring, especially in the markets that we're hiring them for, I would see success as like 2 hires per recruiter per month, which I know some leaders would scoff at and be like, oh my God, that's like not a lot of hires. But when you're talking about populations like senior data scientists and machine learning engineers, there's not a lot of those folks out there. And we have a you know, really high bar here. So it's not an easy go.
Well, yeah, I mean, that sounds accurate to me. So just so you know, like what my company does is we're an RPO provider. So people that are listening to the show that don't know what that is, basically it's a fancy way of saying that companies borrow recruiters from us. and so we work with a ton of tech companies, and what we tell them is like, on average, our recruiters are going to make 2 to 3 hires a month for you. There are some environments where it could be 1, right? And there's some environments, like we have a couple clients where it's like 7 or 8, but right. That is the anomaly, right? Like that's not common. And it's one of those challenges, right? As being a talent acquisition leader, communicating to the leadership team that, you know, it's not, you don't always want to optimize toward volume and you don't always want to optimize toward speed either, right? It's about like, it's better to have a more robust talent team. And you know, honestly, I would love if all my clients were just like 2 hires enough is perfect, right? Yeah. I'd love if they didn't try to push me to 3 or 4. I mean, they're always going to want more, but it's like, you know, the quality of hire at scale is going to exponentially impact the success of the organization.
Absolutely. And it really is the complexity too, right? I mean, right. I have one of my most senior IC recruiters. He made 6 hires last year, but let me tell you about those 6 hires, right? They're like VP of engineering. And then I have a technical recruiter who's hired 50 engineers in the year, right? And so it just is, it's dependent upon the role and the teams and all of that. So like 2 per recruiter per month, but it's really more nuanced than that.
It really is. Yeah. It's obviously like a VP search is going to take up at least half of somebody's time, mm-hmm. right? Versus, you know, if it's maybe just a down the pipe, mid to senior level engineer, maybe they can work on, you know, for that type of search, like what's a full plate, like 6 to 10 openings at a time?
JB, who has been handling a lot of our senior engineering, he will handle, you know, like kind of 1 or 2 of those VP level roles at any given time, full cycle. And then additionally kind of lean in on building pipelines for other more senior roles like director and above level. But we just hired our first recruiter who will solely focus on leadership roles. And so we have this, what we call the leadership trifecta. And there's 3 folks who triangulate on that, building kind of pipeline and then talking to candidates and closing candidates. And so it's never any one person at that level, but kind of a collective between them. But they have really figured out who's great at what, right? Like, I think what our team has done is figured out each other's superpowers and leaned into that.
For sure. Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense. And I really love how you built out the organization. And I love how you and the rest of the leadership team didn't just completely dissolve the talent acquisition program in the middle of COVID, right? Because it's actually, you use that time for planning, which I assumed meant that when we entered the growth market again, you were able to capture top talent versus organizations that cut too deep in talent acquisition budget. And then we're digging out of a hole and trying to hire recruiters when everybody else was, and took too long to realize that recruiter pay had jumped like in some cases, like 2x. You know, so it's like, I think the company is definitely one that see, I guess, talent acquisition as an ongoing function that's more strategic versus like this light switch approach,
right?
That you just turn off and shut down in a down market, right?
Yeah, I think what the Credit Karma leadership team did was really prioritize people over profit. So in the March, April timeframe of 2020, I spent like 8 weeks finding almost 100 people new jobs across Credit Karma, because they came to me and said, We're not going to do a layoff, but we need to find these folks homes where they're doing meaningful work for our members. And so for me, it was kind of a game of Tetris, right? Where I was taking a look at what people had done before, what I know their superpowers to be, where they're interested in learning, and then kind of put them across all of these different verticals, and like test engineering and product management, like you name it. And so then when it was time to flip that switch back on and bring folks back, we weren't starting from scratch. And so I think that that was part of the reason we've had such a giant rebound. And as quickly as we did, is because we didn't do a layoff. We kept all of the really great talent in-house.
So I don't know if this is the right phrase, but is that like when you're like repositioning people within the company, is that talent management or career? Like what's the right way to say that?
No, I think you're right. Like, I think it is talent management, and Credit Karma does an incredible job with that. I think the success of that redeployment really springboard internal mobility for us. That coupled with, we have what's called our PDP every year, which is our professional development plan. We're given like a sizable amount of money and the days off that you want to take classes or go to conferences, whatever it is, right? Books. And so all of those things, I think, really have made a difference in talent management, finding people new roles, making sure that you're retaining the talent, and ultimately, you know, keeping that attrition under 10%.
For sure, for sure. So from a process standpoint, if we're using the term talent management, basically, okay, before we open a rec, let's see if we have anybody within the organization that has this skill set that would be able to fulfill this function. It makes a lot of sense intuitively, like, hey, that, like, let's do that before we bring in somebody else. But I feel like it's obviously harder to execute. So from a tactical process perspective, how do you implement that? Like, how did you actually go about, like, step-by-step doing that?
Well, we incented the folks that did not have their headcount prioritized to say post internally first, right? So we have obviously the internal career site where people can go and take a look at what else is going on here and internally. So we were able to post a lot of roles that had been scoped out previously for the fiscal year immediately. And then it's not really voluntold, right? Like we feel very strongly about ensuring that everyone has a chance to interview. So we're not going to say, you know, hey, James, I know you're really good at this. Why don't you just come on over here into this seat? We want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to raise their hand and interview for that. And we've made that really easy because at Credit Karma, we have true pay equity. And by that, I mean, if you're a senior recruiter and I'm a senior recruiter and we're both in Charlotte, then we are paid exactly the same. And so folks understand that if they're going to be transferring into this job, if they are doing the same job as someone who has more tenure or more senior, like in terms of years of experience or, you know, different gender, different ethnicity, everybody is paid exactly the same. And so I think that that has made those moves much more fluid. And then back to the structured interviewing, we all know that this person has been through the same interview process. And so there's not this, well, like, oh, Andy's team interviews differently than my team, and that person's on Andy's team, so I don't want to consider them. So all of that has made mobility across Credit Karma much easier.
Equitable salaries translating into easier internal mobility is not a concept that I've thought about before. So I feel like that's a really cool takeaway that I just wanted to slow down on and make sure that Nick puts as a chapter for the podcast. So yeah, that's really cool. And so, you know, we're coming up on time here. I wanted to talk about attrition rates.
Yeah.
So the stat I have in front of me is that there was pretty significant decrease in attrition. So could you tell us specifically where your team started with attrition, or where the company started with attrition rather, and where you ended up, which I believe you said is like under around 10% or under 10%. What's the high level stats? And then what is, you know, high level strategy, getting into tactics in terms of how to tackle attrition and cut down on it?
Yeah, so I think that's a it's a big topic to
talk. Yeah, there's like 100 things to talk about there.
In, sorry. Yeah. well, I know like there had never been a head of people at Credit Karma until Colleen, who's our head of people, and she's got a bigger job title than that now. But when she came in, attrition was really high. It was around that 40% mark. And I think going back to implementing systems and tools and process that connect and actually help people understand why their work is meaningful, why it's impactful, why it's interesting, and why they can continue to grow and learn and stay at Credit Karma. I think that that has been the process and the evolution. But I think like if you think about structured interviewing and pay equity and internal mobility and professional development, like this is why we aren't the HR people, right? We really are the product managers of the systems and tools that keep people engaged and happy at work. And so I think those are the things that have really made the difference. It's been the focus on people and putting people first that has made all the difference in the attrition.
For sure. So is, I mean, I'm like, so the big things that come to mind to me are like competitive pay, right? I mean, and then, you know, I'm sure keeping up with inflation has presented challenges in the tight labor market because you have to shift pay packages somewhat frequently or more frequently than others.
I'll tell you what is fantastic about this pay equity plan is that we do a market adjustment twice a year. So we will take a look at your specific job in the market you're at and see where the labor market has moved. We have never moved anyone down. But we move folks up every 6 months as we see the changes in pay. And we work with Radford as the data, the survey that we use, that we take a look at twice a year. And I've seen anywhere between like, you know, a 1% jump, a no percent jump. And I've watched like big moves for some technical roles where you're seeing like 20% in 6 months. And that's just making sure that you are not making it hard for the person who's been sitting in that seat for 2 years to stay when they think that they can jump and go somewhere else and find this 30% increase. You know, they know they're getting paid the same as the person who joined yesterday and that there's no difference there.
Yeah, I love it. And if you're able to speak to a little bit about how this might be more on the HR people side, but career pathing, right? And going through upward mobility within your existing team, right? I mean, that's something that I feel like needs to be centralized in terms of process through the people team, because there's good likelihood that a lot of senior leaders in different functions are not going to know how to tackle that, or maybe aren't making it a priority because they're focused on hitting certain outcomes or metrics. So do you know how your team implemented kind of career pathing, upward mobility, promotion path within each function to make it work at scale?
Yeah, so that the HR business partners work really closely to build out those career frameworks so that people understand exactly what they need to do in order to get there, right? That it's not some moving target and the rules are changing all the time on them. We also do a twice annual review of all the teams, right? So like you sit down with a leader and you talk about exactly where they are and kind of what you're working on with them, and then the expectation for promotion. And our promo opportunity is every quarter. So you don't have to wait a full year to get promoted. I think there's a lot to be said about that, because people could, you know, be ready in August. And if your promo opportunity's not until the next July or whatever, then they're probably going to look somewhere else because they know that they can make more money. But since we do that quarterly and we do the review twice a year, it's very clear to folks exactly where they are and what they need to work on.
Yeah, for sure. I think I agree with that. I think a lot of companies kind of shoot themselves in the foot because they have these very long waiting periods to be eligible for promotion. And, you know, sometimes like the person that's moving up quickly is the one you want to continue to move. Not always, right? But I'm just saying it's kind of silly. And then also from an attrition standpoint, you know, it's something that you can do to get under that 10% attrition rate, which is fantastic, right?
What I like to say is it's the experience and the years, not the years of experience. And I think that's to your point, right? Like you could have some rocket ship person that is on a totally different trajectory than someone who is sitting next to them, and they're not the same. So why would you treat them the same?
Right. I mean, the way that I hire at my company is I care a little bit less about if they've been doing the role for 4 years or 12 years and a little bit more about, again, the quality of the experience. And it's okay. Look, if it takes you 4 years to get there, great. If it takes 10 years, great. It doesn't really matter to me. I just need to know, okay, can we deliver on the outcomes that are required for the role? Right.
Yep, exactly. Well, really cool. I think too, the other thing that companies make the mistake of doing is having this like annual review cycle. Why wait for that one day in the year to give feedback? We use a tool called 15-5, where it's, the premise is like the person spends 15 minutes every week, kind of filling it out, and the manager spends 5 minutes reviewing it. And so our thing at Credit Karma is just constant feedback. Like you're always understanding kind of like what priorities are, what the next steps are. And it's not just waiting until that D-Day to find out exactly what your manager thinks about you.
Right. I think that's just from a general performance management perspective, it gives people the opportunity to improve their skill set a lot faster. And this isn't exactly a topic that's fun to talk about, but also if there's a performance problem, it's an opportunity to set very clear expectations on what's expected in the following week. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, ultimately, if you have to put that pit plan in place, and from an HR perspective, possibly even protect the organization. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't come to that, but the reality is that sometimes it does. And I think that this not only helps people produce better outcomes, but it also ensures that you're going through the proper, you know, steps from an HR perspective too.
Exactly.
So very cool. Very cool. Well, look, we packed this with value. We actually ran a little bit over. Hope that's okay. But this has been great. And so I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today. And for those that are tuning in, if they want to engage with you online, follow you, I was wondering if you, you know, could tell them where they can find you.
Yeah. It's just Ashley Anderson, spelled odd, A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H. So you can find me on LinkedIn, pretty easy to hit up. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks again for joining us. I had a ton of fun. And for everybody tuning in, thanks for joining us as well. And we will see you next time. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.